First Canto, 13th chapter, text number 18.
Vidurastadavipretya
Dhritarashtramabhashata
Rajan Nirgamyatam Shigram Pashyedam Bhayamagatam
Vidurastadabhipretya
Dhritarashtramabhashata Rajan Nirgamyatam Shigram Pashyedam Bhayamagatam Vidurastadabhipretya Dhritarashtramabhashata Rajan Nirgamyatam Shigram Pashyedam Bhayamagatam Vidraha Mahatma Vidur.
That.
Avipretya.
Knowing it well.
Dhritarashtram.
Unto Dhritarashtra.
Abhashata.
Said.
Rajan.
O king.
Nirgamyatam.
Please get out immediately.
Shigram.
Without the least delay.
Pashya.
Just see.
Idam.
This.
Shishrada Bhinjari ki. Shishri Gaurnitai ki. Shishri Prabhupada ki.
Bhayam.
Fear.
Agatam.
Already arrived.
Translation purport by His Divine Grace. Asi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Shishri Prabhupada ki.
Mahatma Vidura knew all this and therefore he addressed Dhritarashtra saying, My dear king, please get out of here immediately. Do not delay. Just see how fear has overtaken you. Purport. Cruel death cares for none. But be he Dhritarashtra or even Maharaj Yudhishthir, therefore spiritual instruction as was given to old Dhritarashtra was equally applicable to younger Maharaj Yudhishthir. As a matter of fact, everyone in the royal palace, including the king and his brothers and mother, was raptly attending the lectures. But it was known to Vidura that his instructions were especially meant for Dhritarashtra, who was too materialistic. The word Rajan is especially addressed to Dhritarashtra significantly. Dhritarashtra was the eldest son of his father. And therefore, according to law, he was to be installed on the throne of Hastinapur. But because he was blind from birth, he was disqualified from his rightful claim. But he could not forget the bereavement, and his disappointment was somewhat compensated after the death of Pandu, his younger brother. His younger brother left behind him some minor children, and Dhritarashtra became the natural guardian of them. But at heart, he wanted to become the factual king and hand the kingdom over to his own sons, headed by Duryodhana. With all these imperial ambitions, Dhritarashtra wanted to become a king, and he contrived all sorts of intrigues in consultation with his brother-in-law, Shakuni. But everything failed by the will of the Lord. And at the last stage, even after losing everything, men and money, he wanted to remain as king. Being the eldest uncle of Maharaj Yudhishthir, Maharaj Yudhishthir, as a matter of duty, maintained Dhritarashtra in royal honor. And Dhritarashtra was happily passing away his numbered days in the illusion of being a king or the royal uncle of King Yudhishthir. Vidura, as a saint and as the duty-bound, affectionate, youngest brother of Dhritarashtra, wanted to awaken Dhritarashtra from his slumber of disease and old age. Vidura therefore sarcastically addressed Dhritarashtra as the king, which he was actually not. Everyone is a servant of eternal time, and therefore no one can be king in the material world. King means the person who can order. The celebrated English king wanted to order time and tide, but the time and tide refused to obey his order. Therefore, one is a false king in the material world. And Dhritarashtra was particularly reminded of this false position and of the factual, fearful happenings which had already approached him at that time. Vidura asked him to get out immediately if he wanted to be saved from the fearful situation which was approaching him fast. He did not ask Maharaj Yudhishthira in that way because he knew that a king like Maharaj Yudhishthira is aware of all the fearful situations of the flimsy world and would take care of himself in due course, even though Vidura might not be present at that time. Om Ajnanam. Mahatma Vidura knew all this, and therefore he addressed Dhritarashtra saying, "My dear king, please get out of here immediately. Do not delay. Just see how fear has overtaken you." This chapter on Dhritarashtra quits home will teach the reader the importance of living one's life in this world in a detached way and to prepare oneself for going back home, back to Godhead. Here Prabhupada is saying it is not only for Dhritarashtra, even for Maharaj Yudhishthira also, these instructions are very relevant. The main theme of Prabhupada's discussing in the purport here is that no one can imagine that I am very successful in my life in this material world. And in this way I have done great things in my life. I am a great personality. In fact, everyone in this material world always is in a mood of competition for becoming a successful person, for becoming a hero or a heroine, and to do things which others haven't done, or to do things better than what others have done, and come to the top rungs of the society, and in this way become very famous. There are different levels of aspiration people have. Some people aspire for money. Some people aspire for fame and name. Some people aspire to become charismatic in the eyes of others. So, in every field you will find there are very powerful orators. There are very powerful cinema actors and actresses. There are powerful artists who play different types of instruments. Similarly, there are very powerful politicians. There are very powerful writers. There are very powerful educators and professors and students. And there are very powerful businessmen. In this way, we can talk of people having different types of power in this world. And everyone in this world is aspiring to become one of these at least. Everyone is trying for becoming somebody who is outstanding, very outstanding and seen as someone very important and someone very special. Here Prabhupada writes in the purport, "Cruel death cares for none, be he Dhritarashtra or even Maharaj Yudhishthira." Like Prabhupada writes this kind of one of the examples in one of his purports. He says that the wet cow dung was one day laughing at dry cow dung, because the dry cow dung, you know, sometimes in the villages you have seen women, they take some cow dung and they make a cake, a cow dung cake, and they put on the walls. Gradually in the sunlight it dries up. After it dries up, where it goes? It goes straight into the furnace for burning. So when the wet cow dung looked at the dry cow dung entering into the furnace, he laughed at him. He said, "Just look at you. You are going to be burnt to ashes now. But the Draikodan told him, you wait for some time and see what happens to you. So in youth, we have a lot of vigor in the body, which creates that passion in us. We feel very proud. You can see one who does not know about the knowledge of soul and body and the difference between the two, they sometimes feel very proud of their body. Sometimes they take special measures to go to gym and build biceps and build leg. After all, it is a mountain of flesh. What else it is, this body? It's made up of stool-like elements, which is destined to be a bundle of bones and a pile of ashes. That's all. But one considers this body to be all in all and considers very proud of this body. And because of that, in youth, sometimes we may look at people who have a hunchback, who may walk with a hunchback, or sometimes, one old lady was telling a young boy who was looking at her and laughing at her. The young boy asked, "My dear old woman, what are you doing? You seem to be searching something on the ground, holding a stick in your hand." He was actually ridiculing her, that you are looking at the ground and you have a hunchback which looks so ugly. Sometimes you feel like ridiculing someone having a hunchback. So that old lady was a very wise lady. She said, "Rere murkana janasi, fool. You don't know what I am searching. I am searching that youth, which is like a mauktikam, which is like a moti. The youth that I have lost, I am searching. Where did I lose it? I am looking down and searching." She said. So now you are in a stage of youth, you are so proud. But she said, just wait and see. One day you will also hold a stick and you will also have a hunchback and you will be searching in the ground also. So, in this way, as the time passes in this world, everyone will eventually get old, everyone will get diseases, everyone has to die and everyone will come to pass. So there is no use of any pride in the material successes of this material world. That is the main point here. In fact, the purpose of highlighting this point is this. People are on an impressive mode. They try to impress other people through all the things that I told you. They want to show how much wealth I have. I have purchased a new bungalow or house. Just come and see. See me, see my beauty. See me, see my wealth. See me, see my influence. I have political influence. I have monetary influence. I have money power. I have political power. I have beauty power. I have charisma. I have so many aristocratic people surrounding me. As Lord Krishna says in the 16th chapter, this is very demoniac mentality. He says that, "Idam madhya maya labdham, imam prapsiye manoratham." Today I have so much wealth. Tomorrow I will accumulate much more. In this way, from a lakhpati, I'll become a karodapati. From arodapati, I'll become a arapati, karapati. Ultimate goal is to become lakshmipati. That is actually the goal. I want to be the enjoyer and I want to gradually have control over everything. Like you see, this mobile people, they sell mobiles like anything. Now it's going practically, everyone wants to have mobile now. So I used to wonder, if they sell so much, I was just calculating, India has got 120 crore population. Even if, 80% of them, say 80, 90 crores of people have mobiles, and one mobile is 5,000 rupees, you can imagine how much money is involved in sale of this mobile. So I used to wonder, what will they do with all this money, if you have so much money? So once, one sannyasi gave us a challenge. He asked us, if you are given unlimited money and unlimited time, what will you do? He asked us all of this question. So this really put us into a kind of thinking. Why? Because generally we all are struggling to get money. And we all are struggling to get time also. We want to save time because time is going out of our hands, slipping out. Ayusha kshana ekopi nalabhya swarna kotibi. Your time is slipping out of your hands. One moment cannot be purchased back with millions of dollars also. But if you are given unlimited time and unlimited money, what will you do? Of course, different people wrote different things. I wrote that I will create one voice for each college. That's the answer I wrote. We'll make, because there are so many colleges and we have so much money, and we'll make boys everywhere and we'll start. So different people wrote different answers. So in this way we will find that people want to have more and more influence over other people with different kinds of powers. It's not only money power, it's also political power. It also involves one's acumen. The whole idea is ultimately to be like God. That's why he says, Idamadya maya labdham. Ivam prapsiye manoratham. Manoratham means riding on the chariot of their mind. They travel all over the world. I will do this. I will do that. They have many secret desires in their heart. And they also reveal to others, I will accomplish this. And they have their goals, material goals. Even before coming to Krishna consciousness, just think for a moment, what all material goals were lurking in your mind. I am very sure many of us must have had many, many material goals, which we considered as success, which we might be still considering as success. It's not likely that we are freed of that mentality. Even after becoming devotees, we may still be impressed by material successes in this world. So, idamasti idamapi me bhavishyanti punardhanam. I will earn even more and more wealth. I will become a millionaire. And then he says, adyo abhijanavanasmi. And surrounding me will be my aristocratic relatives who will salute me, who will shake hands with me, who will invite me for very special meetings and programs. And everyone will admire me. Look at this fellow's aristocracy. See the kind of bungalow he is living in. See the kind of car that he is traveling in. See the kind of people he is surrounded by. See the kind of wealth in which he is flourishing. See the kind of food that he is eating. See the kind of clothes that he is wearing. Just see what a great personality he is. In this way, he is like God. We all should salute him. Like that my friends and relatives will think of me. Like that one is imagining. This kind of desire everyone has in this world. Actually, there is no end to this desire because everyone cannot become like that. So their whole life goes in struggle to become this kind of success, what people consider as success. Yeah. But Prabhupada says, cruel death cares for none. And then subsequently he writes about how there was a great king who was egomaniac. Egomaniac means one who thinks, you know, I am the most important person in the world. I am the center of the universe. Actually, once when Prabhupada was giving a lecture, in those days, there was one particular kind of man who was doing, one student who was doing a doctorate in a college. And his subject matter was studying about the influence of whimsical behavior on other people. So this he was doing a doctorate on. So he always would also behave whimsically, himself also, in crazy ways. One day Prabhupada was giving lecture, and this fellow was very, very eloquent and very powerful in speech. So one day Prabhupada was giving lecture, and this fellow came in between the lecture and said, and then he started declaring to everyone, I have done this, I have done that. In this way, I consider myself the pivot of the universe. What do you all have got to say? He was arguing with everyone. And everyone thought, now here we have Prabhupada, who is a very good match for him. And then Prabhupada looked at him, what is he saying? He asked. And then Shyamasundar Prabhu explained to Prabhupada what he was saying. And Prabhupada laughed and said, he said, Krishna is the pivot of the universe. And then Prabhupada, of course, he went on to say, one who thinks he is God is a dog. One who claims to be God. You are only a servant. And when first sentence Prabhupada told him, you know what was it? When he said, when he heard that, he says, I am pivot of the universe. And Prabhupada said, these are the kinds of thoughts many living entities have. Prabhupada said, that is the very first thing he said. Many people think like that. And Prabhupada smashed him completely. And all the audience cheered, they clapped hands. And Prabhupada, after giving the answer, he said, now let's have roaring kirtan, all of you chant and dance. So, in this way, everyone considers themselves the pivot of the universe, or they want to become pivot of the universe. The desire for controlling is very, very great. So there was one king who wanted to control everyone and everything around him. Generally, the great kings who are controlled by brahmanas, they will be pure hearted. Because they had passion, but rightly directed. So it was always elevating them rather than bringing them down. But when passion is undirected or misdirected or directed in the wrong direction, it can become very dangerous. Just like I heard about Nawab Hussain Shah. He was a very cruel king. He was such a foolish and cruel king. He would sometimes destroy many Hindu temples and desecrate deities. And he would do such things. So when he had made a big palace with all kinds of decorations and sculptures and everything. So when somebody would come to the palace, he would ask them, what do you feel about this? And when they would say, maybe we could have a better design than this, immediately he will chop off their head because of criticizing him. Such cruelty. Because sometimes the kings are very proud of their prowess, their military strength and their influence of the people around them and the wealth that they have, treasury they have and all that. Similarly, there was a king who was very proud. He was controlling everyone and everything. So the minister wanted to teach him a good lesson. So he told the king, my dear king, now in the country everyone is under your control. There is no one or anything which cannot be controlled by. And king said, yes, it's true. He was very proud. And the minister said, I think, my dear king, there was only one problem. Our country is situated in the banks of an ocean. Now I think, my dear king, you also should subdue the waves. You should stop them from coming towards the shore. So he said, come, let's go. So he took the king along. King went with all the ministers and army and everything. He said, yes, there should be nothing in the world which I cannot control. Then he put a very big elevated seat in front of the ocean. And he ordered the tides, stop today and you should never move any longer, any further. And do you think the tides heard him? They were rolling. In fact, when the tides became higher and higher, they toppled off the throne also. The king fell, they fell down. And king was surprised, how everyone follows my order except these tides? And that is how the famous saying came, time and tide, wait for no one, wait for none. So it's a real story actually. The king really tried stopping the waves. Such a fool he was. And Prabhupada writes about that fellow. Prabhupada says that in the end, you saw that. Therefore, one is a false king in the material world. He says, the celebrated English king wanted to order the time and tide, but the time and tide refused to obey his order. Therefore, one is a false king in the material world. And here, in this particular section of Bhagavatam, what we are reading, the false king is Dhritarashtra. Because, as we say, man proposes, God disposes. One may make many plans in life, but things may not go exactly the way we plan many times because it's called as the freak of time, it is called. What is this freak of time? Kala, actually Kala is not something inanimate or impersonal. Kala is ultimately conducted by the Lord Himself, Supreme Lord Krishna Himself. The Kala is connected by Paramatma and the Paramatma is ultimate expansion of Krishna only. But why sometimes the time behaves in ways that we cannot understand? Like for example, you do good, you get good. You do bad, you get bad. But you do good and you get bad. It may be confusing. That's why people ask the question, how can bad things happen to good people? But by the freak of time, sometimes we may not know the answer. But we do see such things. Like there was one very famous businessman, a millionaire, Mr. P.L. Nagara. He wrote a book called as Atmakatha. So in his book Atmakatha, he is writing about his own autobiography of how he was a penniless beggar practically in his life. And how he lived a life of great honesty and simplicity and sincerity. And then as life passed, many, many tests came in his life. And then he gradually started picking up business. And there were abundant opportunities for, corruption and everything. But he remained an honest businessman. But there were certain occasions where he committed mistakes, for which also he very sincerely repented in front of God. And in this way, he realized in his life that honesty is the best policy. keeping that as the ultimate goal of life, leading a life of morality. He says, at last I became successful in my life as the very big businessman. So that book is written with lot of varieties of personal life examples, incidents. So it's written like a novel. So it became a very famous book. So Prabhupada wrote a comment about that book, Atmakatha. So Prabhupada says that this person is our friend to our Back to Godhead magazine. So we came to know recently he gifted us with this book, Atmakatha book, to us. And we went through that. It is a very interesting book, very nice. But Prabhupada would like to give some interpretation, comment about that book. He says, Prabhupada's comment is this. He says, in this book, Mr. Nagar, he claims that because he was very good in his life and he followed honesty, truthfulness and everything, he achieved success, which he says, and the success is in terms of his getting abundant wealth. Prabhupada says, there have been many good people, like the great King Harishchandra. He did so many pious deeds, but he achieved a lot of difficulties in his life. And he gives the example of King Yudhishthir. He was banished to the forest, his wife was insulted, all wealth was taken away, although he was leading a very, very pure life and pious life. So Prabhupada says, one's success is not to be estimated in terms of how much money one has accumulated or how much fame one has achieved in life in this material world. Such success and failure achieved in life is simply a play of Maya. It's a play of Maya. I would like to read the exact sentences so you can see, you can hear for yourself. It's very interesting. See, but from our point of view, the successful life of a worldly man does not end the sojourn of life's mission. Such success only does not take us to the ultimate goal. From the life of Sri L.P. Nagar, one can learn and become a prince from the state of a beggar. And sometimes we can find that a princely man becomes a beggar in the street in spite of his acts of charity, munificence, altruism, goodness, honesty, etc. Maharaj Harishchandra became homeless beggar by the pious acts of charity. Maharaj Yudhishthira and brothers became homeless vagabonds by the acts of their goodness and honesty. Such paths are fixed up by the illusory nature called by the name Daivi Maya. On the flickering platform of playful life, we are dressed sometimes either as a prince or as a beggar. Sometimes we are a prince, sometimes we are a beggar. But in fact, out of the stage, none of us is either a prince or a beggar. These features of life come and go like seasonal changes of time. And according to the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, no learned man should be very serious about it. Our aim must be targeted towards a release from this playful stage under some false decoration in the direction of Maya. That is our real Atmakatha. Even if we are awarded the facility to play the part of Brahma, the first and foremost man of the creation, whose duration of life is considered to be some hundreds of crores of solar years, still we cannot be happy in this material world. The material world is condemned by the Lord Himself, declaring it to be the abode of miseries and death, Dukkhalaya Mashashvata. Even a successful householder like Sri Nagarji will also admit this cult of miseries in the material existence. He's saying. And then he's saying, success and failure in the material world are all but stage management of Maya by allowing us to play a part which we desire to do by our own inclination. We express a desire and Maya gives us opportunity. In the amateur parties, the respective members, they select their own parts and the director gives them instruction to dance. And thus we are playing the part of a dancing dog in the stage of the material nature. Mother Maya, the director of the material world, gives us all facilities to play our parts very successfully. A beggar also can play his part very successfully by the expert direction of the mother, as a great politician also can play his part. In this world, great politician or wealthy man and a beggar, both are playing their part by Maya's facility that she gives. But a successful man or living entity is he who can know from the lessons of Bhagavad Gita that he is neither a beggar nor a prince, but in fact he is a part and parcel of the Supreme Lord And his only business is that in this human form of life he has to go back home, back to Godhead, his eternal father. That is the real story of, that is the story of real Atmakatha. And then he says, one more interesting point. He says, one who gets this boon of human life knows everything about his real self and duty and to go back home. He is a Brahmana, one who knows his duty. And then he says, the man who comes here and engages himself to play the part of beggar or prince on the stage of illusory nature and all of a sudden quits the stage by the order of the controlling deity without knowing his proper identity is called as a Kripana. The miser is a mischievous man because he does not know how to utilize his acquired wealth. A miser man is captivated by his good luck but does not know how to utilize the opportunity. Here comes a very important point. Generally, when we become materially successful, in some way, we are given a post or a position, we are given an honor, or given an award, or we are recognized by the society, or recognized by someone. So these kind of things give us something called as illusory happiness. That is explained in Bhagavad Gita. Na prakrishyet priyam prapya nodvijet prapya chapriyam stira buddhi rasam mudo brahmani brahma ved brahmani stitaha. A man who is situated in the spiritual platform, who is that person? Na prakrishyet priyam prapya. If he achieves some material success in life, he doesn't raise his collar. I did it. I am so great. I am so smart. I am so cute. I can do great things in life. He doesn't say that. He is not very proud of the material successes. Na prakrishyet priyam prapya. Or he doesn't feel great joy in achieving the material good. Sometimes you see, when we get something material, the material good, we feel very great joy. We feel elated. But you have to be very careful. Because we become very elated when something is taken away, we will cry to the same extent. That means you are very emotional. Na prakritye, na prakrishyet, priyam prapya, na udvijet. Udvijet means getting agitated. Prapya cha apriyam. When you get apriya cheese, unwanted things, then one should not become agitated in mind. Because we are living in the world where nothing is predictable. Suddenly there is a fire accident. Suddenly somebody is bitten by a snake. Suddenly some automobile accident takes place. Suddenly there is loss of money. Suddenly one gets a disease, deadly disease, one has to go to doctor. So in this world, in this, no one can say what will happen to me at what moment. Sometimes we are faced with auspiciousness and inauspiciousness and they strike us at any time. It's unpredictable. Of course, all of us, we all are praying that, you know, let everything, like one man, gentleman I met a couple of days ago, he said, my highest desire in my life is I should die peacefully, you know. He said, I said, yes, die peacefully, remembering Krishna also. You add that also, I told them. Not only just die peacefully, die, if you, along with dying peacefully, if you remember Krishna, you will go back to Krishna also. Otherwise, what is the use of a peaceful death if you die peacefully and become a dog? Next life. Then they will stone you in your next life. Isn't it? So, we all desire good fortune and auspiciousness in our life. But in this world, we may be faced with anything. So he says, na prakrishyet priyam prapya. Krishna says, be cool in both. Don't be elated. Don't become remorseful. Have a sthira buddhi. And what is the meaning of sthira buddhi? Not that you become a stone and you are sitting in one place. Good comes, bad comes. I am immovable. Nobody can agitate me. That is not the sthira buddhi is talking. Sthira buddhi means fixed in your duty of Krishna consciousness. One should not give up one's Krishna consciousness in adverse circumstances. Where, like we can see, for example, say some mishap happens in your life. We can see that our chanting is visibly affected. Which means our duty is affected visibly. Similarly, if we get some success in anything that we do, again our chanting is visibly affected. We can see that. We are trying to chant Hare Krishna, but mind has got hooked. No, 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 I achieved great success. You know, your mind is jumping, you know. I am very great, you know. I am very smart, you know. And all of us are given something in our life to do by the superior arrangement. When you achieve some success, we achieve a little success and we become so proud of that little success, as if we have done some miracles. As well as Gopakrishna Maharaj was here in Pune, so I was telling Maharaj, Maharaj, it's a great project, you know, 15 crore, you know. I think by the effort of all the devotees and struggle, it will happen. And Maharaj gave one sweeping remark. He said, what is so great about it? You are talking this 15 crore. You know, the Swaminarayan people have made a temple, some 800 crores or something, in Delhi. He said, so our project is small project, 15 crores is nothing, you can very easily collect. He was selling. And if Krishna wants, he will send people. So it's very cool, he was selling. But sometimes, when we take up anything, whether it be preaching or whether it be managing or anything offered to us, when we achieve some little success, what happens? We become so overthrown emotionally that it affects our duty, affects our chanting, affects our reading, affects our consciousness. Although we know we are doing for Krishna, we may become proud also. We can become contaminated by pride. We can become contaminated by passion. Same way, if we lose something, that also affects us terribly. Or if we have done a mistake, or if we have lost something, that affects us, visibly it affects us. And when we want to chant, again and again that loss keeps coming in our mind. One devotee was telling, there was a brahmachari in the ashram. One day he got a call from his brother, and his brother said, now our parents have sold out the house in the village which we had. Now we have come to the town. It was almost like a heart attack. Boop! Was it for him? He got a heart attack. What is it? They sold it. Why did they sell it? Such a beautiful house. Just behind the house there is a pond. And there are coconut trees. I used to go and play there. That pond. At the end of the street there used to be a beautiful temple. Everything was so nice. And our house was in the center of the Brahmins' Agrahar. Agraharam they used to call it. Such an important house. Our four generations of grandfathers have lived in it. Why did they sell it? He was literally weeping. Almost tears were coming in his eyes. And his brother said, no. My dear brother, you have become brahmachari now. You know, and I am also going abroad and everything. And parents thought, better come to city. You know, they have come to city. And then he kept the phone down. Then he thought to himself, hey, what a fool I was. What kind of loss is it for me? Am I going to go to that house and live there ever? I am a brahmachari in the ashram. And I have cast away my mother and father, family, friends, studies, business, everything, and I have come here. What have I got to give and take with that house in some remote part of India? Some village? Then he laughed at himself. There is no one greater fool than me. And he said to himself, this is no loss at all, but I am thinking it is a great loss. And he said, after he had heard this, for about a week his chanting was affected very much. Every day he would, you know, sit to chant and immediately the house will come in the mind. Such a beautiful house. Coconut trees. Cows and, you know, cows and calves. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Isn't it? Can you imagine? Similarly, we become terribly affected by the loss and success. But nothing is important in this material life, in this material world. It's simply a game. Like you can see, when you were all children, all of you think for a while, when you were playing, you know, we used to play this trade, you know, trade game. You know, you all know trade? Yeah, where you have many notes, you know, 100 rupee note, 500 rupee note, 1000 rupee note, 5000, 10,000 and all that. And you know, actually we never knew the game. At one time parents purchased it and they taught us, you know, how to play this game. And once this trade game started, you know, you keep moving the pawn and then you come to a particular point where you'll get some money, give some money. My Lord, it was such an enthusiastic game. We would forget eating and sleeping. Morning, sometimes we would start at 8 o'clock, sitting in the summer vacation time. And it all day would go. Practically, we would not eat and parents have to literally catch us by the ears and take us and, you know, feed the food. Otherwise, you know, we would be eating with one hand and, you know, playing with another hand. But all that is, what is that game involving? It's all some false rupee notes, imitation currency note. Right? Even the real currency note is also an imitation only. This is also a game only. We are counting money. I am getting so much money. I am giving so much money. But this life is not permanent. That is like a dream in a dream, and this is a dream. Both are dreams. Because now in this life I am a prince. The next life I will be a beggar, as Prabhupada says here. Like Rahuguna was taught by Jadabharata. He told Jadabharata, my dear king, now you are sitting on the palanquin and you are very proud and you are very passionate. You are ordering me and you are shouting at me that I am not carrying the palanquin properly. So I am a servant and you are a master. And the next life, I may be sitting in your place and you may be carrying my palanquin. And I may be ordering you. That is a play of Maya in this world. Nobody is a king. Nobody is master. Nobody is servant. All of us are simply like play toys in the hands of illusory energy. Don't be proud of the position in which you are put. In fact, people who are put in position of a leader, as a counselor or a leader or a president or a department head or in charge of anything, and they should get a practical realization of this. It's very important. Because if we don't realize this, we can become tricked by Maya to become proud and to think oneself to be very great. We should know the leadership is a facility awarded to us for a temporary period of time to perform wonderful service for the people on behalf of God. That is leadership. So we have to become an instrument in Krishna's hands. And we put ourselves in that position. And a leader has a healthy sense of preparatorship. What is the meaning of that? The healthy sense of preparatorship means whatever leniences and advances are given for a leader, use it all to serve the subordinates in the best way possible. Just like you see, Pratap Rudraja, he's a king, but he's taking a jadu and sweeping. Now nobody can scold him, why you are doing this? He's a king, he can do that. He has that freedom. And at the same time, he can sit on the throne and he can collect the taxes from the people and he can use it for propagating devotional service, which he did. One can do that. In the same way, one gets a kind of a false sense of jolliness or comfort, which is called as elitist syndrome. The elitist syndrome is a particular kind of illusory state of consciousness where one imagines oneself to be master. Because one is given some post and privileges. One has given some position and power. And that makes one feel some kind of false pride. And that kind of pride is very dangerous. Because such a person cannot understand the heart of the poor people. He cannot understand the heart of the subordinates. Because he himself cannot put himself in the role of a subordinate. He feels a sense of false pride. And that pride can cause a lot of harm. That pride actually makes him forget God because he thinks he is God. He cannot think of God. He cannot feelingly call, hey Krishna, hey Govinda, hey Gopal, hey my master, hey Gopinath. He cannot call like that. Because he feels he is like an intoxicated man who is drunk. And he thinks, I am flying in the sky. I am the master of everyone. And that was the situation of Dhritarashtra here. Here, what happened to Dhritarashtra? He lamented that I am blind. So, out of my three brothers, I don't think they will give me the post of a king. So he was aspiring and hankering to become a king in the early days. And by the play of illusory energy, which is generally the thing which happens in the material world, or in the case of the Pandavas, it is actually the divine arrangement of Lord Krishna, who is trying to orchestrate something very great for the world. What happened? Pandu actually was born as a pale child, you know. And Dhritarashtra was born blind. And Vidura was born as a son of a servant maid. All three of them had, in one sense, some kind of blemish. But out of the three, Pandu was considered best. He was very ideal in character and many wonderful qualities he had. But one problem was, Pandu always liked to live in the forest and live in the midst of ascetics. He was a very saintly character. So he would go and conquer many kings, get lot of wealth, and come and give it back to Dhritarashtra and Vidura. He would not take anything. He would live like a very simple ascetic. And then he went to the forest. Of course, in forest, you know, he left his body in the forest. When the news came, the Pandava children came back, and Dhritarashtra internally felt joyful. Why? He knew that Vidura is a Dasiputra. He won't be made the king, and I will be made the king. Although he was blind, he was made the king. So that gave him great joy. which is a problem about which we are talking. So he felt, now I have the power, I have the position, I have the control. So he wanted to use his power to destroy the Pandava children by using Duryodhana as the medium. Just see, because he was given the power. So God is watching everyone. He's a super soul in the heart of everyone. And he knows what to award to whom. And the Pandava children were very, very wonderfully protected by the affection of Vidura and Bhishma. And then they grew up. And later on the situation transpired. One who is a king today can be a pauper tomorrow in the street. Or one who is a beggar today, by the fluke of Maya's arrangement, one can become a king. It's possible and it happens in this world. Like you see, Kaun Banega Karodupati. They say, and then somebody is a beggar and he becomes Karodupati. Isn't it? Somebody gets crores of rupees by lottery or something like that. Or somebody is a big Karodupati, he is looted by the thieves and he is shot. Or his, sometimes his family members come to the street. It happens in this world, such things. So, something similar happened with Dhritarashtra. They were at one time like king of the whole world. And now all his 100 sons were killed in the battle. And he was left alone. Actually, even he was supposed to be killed. But the Pandavas were such virtuous people that they didn't kill Dhritarashtra. And instead, they respected him exactly as they respected Vidura or Bhishma Pitama. And Yudhishthira was such a great soul that he made Dhritarashtra sit on a elevated seat, on a Raja Simhasan, and served him faithfully, loyally, giving him food, drinks, taking care of him personally, and showed him so much of love and affection, as he used to show him before, without any difference. Although, if Yudhishthira Maharaj was like Aurangzeb, he must have put Dhritarashtra in the jail, isn't it? At least in the jail, if not, would have killed them. You know, Aurangzeb, what he did, he cut off the, neck of his brothers, killed them, and he put his father in the jail, and he cut off the hands of all the people who constructed Taj Mahal. Such a ruthless king, merciless king. But here is Yudhishthira Maharaj, although he must have told, it is you, Dhritarashtra, who is the cause of all our suffering, who has been the cause of all our suffering since a long time. Now it's an opportunity for us, and he didn't kill him. He took such great care of him and with great respect. And here Vidura is telling, my dear Dhritarashtra, you are sitting on the throne like a king, Rajan. He is sarcastically calling him. You are thinking you are a Rajan. You are a king. You are no better than a household dog. It's very, very serious, severe word. Sometimes a man who has become 80 years or 90 years, he is at home and his son gets married, but his son doesn't like the father. Of course, son may like the father, but sometimes the daughter-in-law doesn't like the father. She says, your father is a big nuisance, all the time coughing. We may also get this contagious disease, You put a cot outside the house and let him live there. So they put a cot outside and he is living there, outside the house, and the food goes to him. Every day, he eats the food and he lives there, just like a household dog. So the Shastras say one should, in the same section, Prabhupada will say somewhere, that one should not be materially attached to one's children and the belongings at home. Like you see, there are many sons and daughters who ditch their parents and go away. They want to live separately. Many times they say that the brahmacharis, you have foregone your duty to mother and father. Okay, brahmacharis have joined the ashram by giving up their mother and father, but what they do? Till marriage they live with the father. After marriage, wife takes them away. And they go and live separately. Many times you find, right? Even in pious homes it happens many times. Daughter-in-law says, I cannot tolerate your mother. If you want me to tolerate your mother, then we both will make you a mridangam. Mother on one side and daughter-in-law on the other side, both dumataka dumataka. Son cannot live peacefully. So they want to live separately. So that, and son also agrees because, he thinks, I can never sort out these people. if I am here, I will get more stress at home than in the office. So he also lives separately. It happens like that. But sometimes such a son, occasionally may call the retired father, who is at home. Father is 70 years, 80 years, he is doing some life insurance or something like that he is doing. He is spending his, he is killing his time. Some time pass he has to have.
And he's telling his father, "Father, come to London, come to America, come somewhere he calls." And the father will tell all his friends and colleagues, "You know, my son is such a loving son, he is calling me." And you go there, and what for he calls? "You take care of my small child." In America, if you have to employ a servant for taking care of a child, you have to pay so much dollars. So you take care of a child. So he is simply used for that purpose. Just see. So, in the same manner here, Dhritarashtra is being strongly chastised by Vidura. "You are like a household dog." According to Shastras, Panchashavurdham Manam Brajet. Beyond 50, a person should focus on complete spirituality. No more material life. Material life is over. No business, no counting money for one's own family, no sex life, no attachment to children and grandchildren. One should give up all that. And one's focus should be returning back home, back to Godhead. So Prabhupada says 75% of a human's life is meant for detachment and focusing on ultimate goal. And the 25% of Grihastashram is allowed for one to prepare for that. Yeah, so that one can be given some amount of time. Otherwise one will feel too much dragged. Okay, you have your wife, children, family, business and everything. But during the time also you cultivate Krishna consciousness to gradually detach yourself. It's called as regulated life. So here Vidura is a sannyasi, he has no business to do at home. Why he has come here? He has come here only to deliver his brother, Dhritarashtra, to preach to him that don't waste your valuable human form of life. Life is not meant for achieving this kind of material success. You see, towards the end, Prabhupada writes in the article, "A successful life in the worldly sense for a few number of years in the short span of life is no success. If we do not know what we are, why there are miseries, where from we have come, where we shall go, why we are begging and why we are ruling. These are some of the questions pertaining to the Atma or the spirit soul. That should be the subject matter for discussion in the Atma Katha." And Sri Nagarji or similar other gentlemen who are successful as householders, we don't tell them to stop writing Atma Katha. Simply by becoming a prince from the state of a beggar. But the idea should be farther and farther, more extended till the real Atma and not the unreal Atma of the body and mind has stopped altogether begging. So long there is repetition of birth and death, one must know it for certain that the begging process is going on. Whether you are a prince or a beggar, you are a beggar. As long as the cycle of birth and death is going on. And then Prabhupada concludes with a very beautiful example of Rupa Goswami. He says, Srila Rupa Goswami was previously a minister in the state service of Nawab Hussain Shah in Bengal. When he retired from the service, he showed us the ways of how to utilize one's wealth by proper disbursement. He spent 50% of his accumulated wealth in the service of the Lord, 25% was kept for himself to meet so many emergencies of life, and like Sanatan's deliverance and all that. Sanatan, for escaping, he kept some money for him. 25% of his wealth distributed amongst his relatives who expect to inherit something from the father. So often relatives and friends have some expectations, so he kept 25% for them. And then here Prabhupada says a very important sentence. He did not allow himself spoiled by his energy in the way of giving all the money for so-called kinsmen. He says, not that he took all the money, like, you know, like there was a gentleman who, he was almost 72 years old. He came to our ashram here. Very big millionaire, wealthy millionaire. He had some 2-3 sons. He said, "You know, can I join your, ashram?" So then we asked his background, everything. I was interviewing him, talking to him. Then he said, "I had given away all my wealth, millions and millions of rupees and property, worth property, everything to my sons and daughters. Now they are all settled. Now I have come. Now you take me in your ashram. So do you have any old age ashram?" he said. So he was looking for a old age ashram where he can avoid spending a single penny and live at the cost of others like a parasite, while he wanted to give away everything to his family people. That's what he is saying here. He did not allow himself spoiled by his energy in the way of giving all the money for so-called kinsmen. Because some people think, you know, they are my real relatives. To them I'll give all the money, you know. Even sometimes
when brahmacharis join the ashram, they have some money, big money, 50,000 or 1 lakh or 2 lakh or something like that. We tell them that you should give parents. But sometimes there is excess money, then they are in a dilemma, what to do with that money. One part of the mind says, you know, after all, my parents are, I like my parents so much, you know, let me give it to them. Here in ashram, I will get everything. One part of the mind says. Another part of the mind says, you know, I have already given them so much money, you know. You know, they don't need this money. This is extra money. Maybe I'll give it to temple. Correct? There is a dvandva that goes on. So if your material attachment is more, you will give that side. If your Krishna attachment is more, you will give this side. You will see that when there is some frill, extra thing. Somebody thinks, I will leave everything there and I will come with my one single dress. So Krishna will take care of me. After all, Krishna says, you know, yogakshem muhamyam. So that is why he says here, he did not allow himself spoiled by his energy in the way of giving all the money for so-called kinsmen. Of course, if you are instructed by your authorities that you should give all the money you earned from your job, you should give it to your authorities, give it to your family. But sometimes, you all can ask this question to ourselves, when there is some extra money that comes, like, you know, one boy was telling me, now he had given the parents and he joined the ashram, you know, and then suddenly some 80,000 rupees came from the company, you know, which was some money from the company. So he asked me, Prabhuji, what I should do? I asked, what do you want to do? So Prabhuji, I can either give it to my parents or I can give it to temple. What do you want to do? So can I give it to my parents? Prabhuji said, okay, give. I didn't say no. Now everyone knows what is in my mind now. generally when such money comes, you have a choice. Because you know now already you have shaved up your joint and the money comes, why not give to Krishna service? But you need detachment for that. But still there can be attachment. A successful householder, therefore, should not spoil his energy in the service of Maya, but follow the footprints of Srila Rupa Goswami and engage himself in the service of the ideal Mahatma, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who refused to accumulate even a particle of Mirabalan. What is Mirabalan? For the next day's use. And what to speak of accumulating money in the name of deities, mathas and temples. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not accumulate any deities, mathas and temples. He never wanted to be a mathadipati. He never wanted to be a master. Lord Chaitanya, who is the real master? He didn't want to be master. He wanted to be a servant. If somebody would call him the real master, he would plug his ears and say, Vishnu, 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 in order to set an example for the other living beings. Don't call me the master. So Lord Chaitanya was never attached. Sometimes, you know, as we become even sannyasis, we go to that level, we may sometimes proudly feel, I have so many temples under me, I have so many mathas under me. Even at that stage, it can come if one's mind is materialistic. Such kind of name, fame, glory, we say, no? That kind of thing can come. Like sometimes, you know, somebody tells you, I think you have 3 preaching programs in a week, and we say, no, I have 4. I have so many, or I have so many people under my control. If you say, oh, maybe you have 20 counselors. No, I have 22 counselors, you know, not 20. How many people are under me? How many people I control? How many centers I control? And what is my post? What is my position? We have that kind. Here he says, Lord Chaitanya was not attached to accumulating money in the name of deities, mathas and temples. And then Prabhupada says, Srila Rupa Goswami was not only an intelligent statesman in the service of the Nabab, but also he was an authorized Goswami in the service of the Lord. A Goswami in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is non-different from the Mahatma described in the Bhagavad Gita. One who engages his senses 10% in the service of the Lord is really a controller of the senses. This is the meaning of controller of senses. One who has engaged his senses completely in Krishna service. And one who is able to control his senses in that way by engaging in Krishna service is powerful to become a Goswami and is able to recruit disciples from all over the world. Srila Prabhupada ki. In this way, Prabhupada is a real Goswami in the line of Rupa Goswami, who was so detached that he was never attached to his position. Although Prabhupada owned the whole society of ISKCON, when he established society, he invited his godbrothers like Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj to come and join him in preaching in America and take up the presidentship of the whole society. Prabhupada was so detached. And at the time of leaving the body, when people asked him, Prabhupada said, Kuch ichha nahi, I don't have any desire, he said. So we have to know, in this world, all the activities that we do are like a play or like a game.
Nothing is really important in one from one point of view. Why? Because, you know, the post and position and the name and fame we get will all be mixed with the sand, with the sands of time, as we leave the body and go to the next destination. So, we should not artificially, materially try to impress other people in this world. So, if you are trying to materially impress other people, that will really swallow a lot of our energy and time. And we will not be able to render our service to Krishna peacefully. Great Goswamis like Rupa Goswami, how they could render so much service, volumes of service. The reason is, when people like Rupa Narayan and other argumentators and debaters came to them, they were ready to give a certificate that I am defeated by you. Because they never tried to impress the people of the world. They lived very, very simple lives. So, one sign of a great soul is simplicity also. And not become afflicted by the successes and failures of this material world, which is like passing of summer and winter season, as he says in this. So this is, Prabhupada explains in one of the purports in Bhagavad Gita, that in this material world, such disturbances are quite normal, he says. Such kind of mishaps and disturbances, because that's the nature of the material world. Material world is designed like that. And understanding Krishna to be the real master and ourselves to be his instrument, in whatever position we are put in, whatever facilities are awarded to us, we should utilize them fully in Krishna's service. Then we become true Goswamis. So, Prabhupada is also including Yudhishthira in this. Why? Because Yudhishthira is a youngster now, young king now, and he is occupying the post of a king of the whole world now. But at the same time, Prabhupada says, if you are in such a position, then don't be proud, because ultimately, everyone, a time will come to pass when we all will not have that position anymore, like he is saying about Yudhishthira Maharaj. But he also concludes the purport saying, Yudhishthira Maharaj was not like Dhritarashtra. He was far more intelligent. Dhritarashtra was an attached householder. He wanted to remain in the post of a king. He was materially attached, but Yudhishthira was greatly detached. Yudhishthira was attached to Krishna. So because of that, what happened? When Krishna left the planet and returned to his abode, Yudhishthira immediately renounced the world. He didn't need a Vidura to come and preach to him. He immediately renounced the world without any hesitation. As Prabhupada says here, and towards the end, Vidura asked him to get out immediately if he wanted to be saved from the fearful situation which was approaching him fast, which is the death. That means before death, one should have utilized one's life to fully surrender to Krishna. If we didn't do that, then death will overtake us and then we will be given another material body. But Vidura did not ask Maharaj Yudhishthira in that way to renounce. Why? Because he knew that a king like Maharaj Yudhishthira is aware of all the fearful situations of the flimsy world and would take care of himself in due course, even though Vidura might not be present at that time. And Vidura was convinced that Yudhishthira Maharaj was a great soul, Mahatma, and he was a devotee of Krishna, and he doesn't need such preaching. Although he didn't need such preaching, they were all listening also, attending the lectures of Vidura, which goes to show that at no point of time we should consider ourselves liberated and free from danger. Even if we know the knowledge, we should keep on hearing it again and again, remembering it again and again, and pray to the Lord to never put us in forgetfulness. And we should be enthusiastic in detaching ourselves more from materialistic world and attaching ourselves more to the lotus feet of Krishna. That is actually the goal. So in this way, this section, Dhritarashtra quits home, is a very enlightening section for all the readers. This incident is a very, very enlightening section. It's very awakening. When I first read this section, I was so thrilled. I could not sit in one place and read it. I was standing. And standing and walking, I was practically running here and there and then I completed reading this whole section. It is so thrilling it is. Reading especially the verses spoken by Vidura towards Dhritarashtra. The verse after verse is charging him. You know, the very first verse also he said the same thing. If you hear, the very first verse also he told the same thing what he is telling in this verse. He told that the death is coming, approaching, fast approaching, the Kala is approaching, You know, the example is given, Vayoriva Ghanavali. You know, the mountain, the
cloud is so huge in size. It carries gallons and gallons of water. Huge cloud. It can be compared to a big elephant. But then the wind which comes, Vayoriva Ghanavali. Ghana Avali. Avali means many bunches of mountain-like clouds. When the wind blows, all the whole cloud you can see sometimes in a monsoon season, you can see in the sky. Have you seen a huge cloud being carried by the wind? Have you seen that? From one side of the sky, it goes to another side of the sky. Similarly, he says, there are big people in this world, powerful in terms of money, in terms of fame, in terms of name and all that. But even they are moved by the powerful force of time, moved off from this world. Prabhupada used to ask, where is Napoleon Bonaparte? Where is Hitler? Where is Stalin? Where is Alexander the Great? He must have become Alexander the Small now. All the great personalities who appear in the face of the earth, they do their drama for some time. Like the toy. Sometimes you have seen a toy, you give a key to the toy. Tamma 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 dam dam dam. Finished. You seen that? All the drama goes on for some time and they come to a halt. And they are gone from the face of the globe. So in Bhumi Gita, Bhumi is laughing at such kings. She is saying, just as the child comes into this world helplessly, you know, have you seen a small child waving the hands and legs and not even eyes open, kwa 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 and weeping? You have seen a small child, newly born child, so rosy and so tender. In the same manner, she says, the great kings, so-called great kings, they leave this world, they depart from this world helplessly in their deathbed. You know, exactly like a child. But in the in-between period, foolish kings go on increasing their boundary, claiming that this much land is mine. Now I have acquired much more. Now even more. And then after acquiring all this land, they are lying in their deathbed like a small child, waving their hands and legs. They pitiably get out of this world. Just look at these kings, and Bhumi is laughing at them. Bhumi can laugh because she owns all the land. She's the owner of all the land, she's laughing at them. So, in this way, we have to remember the effect of Kala or effect of time. If we remember the effect of time, we will never become proud. We will know that, you know, this charge is given to me for some time. Like I'm president of Pune, it's given to me for some time. Or sometime, if it is taken back, I should give it back. And then I should be continuing my devotional service peacefully. And now we should be doing devotional service even now while holding the post, knowing that it can be taken at any time back. It's a privilege given to us. And then use the privilege to serve Krishna nicely. When it is taken back, then somebody else will do it. And we continue serving Krishna, which is our eternal dharma. So be fixed in dharma in all situations, whether you are a prince or a beggar. That is the message. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much.